morning. Just after 8 o'clock, you're listening to Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, the flagship station of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here every Sunday, same time, live in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. That we includes my extremely happy, relieved, well-rested, emotionally restored.
Not the last two. No.
And maybe even feeling a little vindicated.
Not the last two, but...
Co-host Caleb Herring. Oh, why all that? Stick around. Caleb is the last UNLV quarterback to lead them to a bowl game. And he is also the radio color voice for Rebel Football. And let's give him some credit for what else he does. The co-host of the Tony Sanchez Show Wednesday night on our sister station, ESPN The Leader. Maybe next week he'll mention the show. We'll see. We'll keep bugging him for that. Let me throw an elbow at him.
Jesus Christ.
Brian was also here on a three-week without taking a vacation streak.
Yes,
how is that? We got a winning streak. Jose Sudden Death Vellante. And in front of all of us, the best damn producer in Las Vegas, Chris Magnum Chapman, who spent the last two seasons moonlighting as the Vegas Golden Knights radio locker room reporter.
Yes, moonlighting is a good word for that because obviously I wasn't a permanent fixture in there. I'm just moonlighting.
Moonlight.
As one.
I tried to get it right and make it sound kind of prestigious.
Wasn't that the TV show that Bruce Willis used to be on?
Moonlighting.
Moonlighting.
Moonlighting. Hey, listen, show is also streaming live on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live, on my personal page, on Caleb's page, on Jose's page. And the show's Facebook page, which is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. The show is live, and the phone line is open. The Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's up, everybody? This is Jose Sendez Volonte, and it's time for What's on Tap. What's on Tap is brought to you by our title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Make sure you check out cardinalfinancial.com. Now, before I get to what's on tap, let me go ahead and throw out all of our social medias out there so you can check us out. Out of Line on Facebook, OUTTALINE. Instagram now, Out of Line 1340. And Twitter as well, Out of Line 1340. Check them out. We got videos from last night's game and a bunch of other stuff you won't want to miss. Today, what's on tap? UNLV football, Aviators baseball, and Aces basketball were all in town last night at the exact same time as our good friend Alan Sloan likes to call it last night. We had a good sports buffet here in Las Vegas. So, of course, we'll be talking about that. Not only that, this morning's guest will be a fun one. Michael Babcock from TMZ Sports will be joining us to give us a national inside scoop from TMZ Sports. Not only that, our Aviators report. The Aviators are in a dogfight right now with the Chihuahuas for that final playoff spot in the PCL. Jimmy Gemma from the Aviators will be joining us to give us his Aviators report today. Plus, of course, Nightcap Blazing. And today's fact, this is one that, trust me, you won't want to miss.
Did you say a dogfight with the Chihuahuas? Was that like a play on words? Did you catch that?
Hey,
that didn't go over your head, did it?
It didn't go over my head.
All right, I just want to make sure you guys got that.
I mean, the dogfight with the Chihuahuas. I mean, come on here.
But here's the thing, though. After today's fact, this, there might be a dogfight here in the studio. But with that being said, What's on Tap is brought to you once again by Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com.
This. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
It's a fact. Last night at Sam Boyd Stadium, in the 2019 season opener, the UNLV Rebels beat the Southern Utah Thunderbirds 56-23 and exorcised a demon that has been looming over Las Vegas. And since 2011, the last time the T-Birds came to town, this, more than anything, means the starting quarterback on the night of September 24th, 2011 can sleep at night. Caleb, any idea why that would be important enough to start the show with? I mean, UNLV was favored by more than 25 points, and they did their job. Why is that a big deal?
I'm just saying.
My God.
I didn't know we were opening old wounds here.
Oh, is that a wound?
Yes.
How is that a wound? Dude, you played through that. That's in the past.
It's not a wound. It's not a wound. It's over.
You were a young guy. You were a young kid.
Everybody knows that I did not have a night like last night against Southern Utah when I played against Southern Utah. So, yes.
The bottom line is here. You had a solid night. No, aside from the picks, you had a solid night numbers-wise.
Aside from the three interceptions.
Come on, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just saying you had a touchdown. You had 233 throwing.
He was better than the opposing quarterback.
Exactly. You were.
But here's what I will say.
You were a big fan of Phillip Payne that night, too.
I was.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 175. You threw 175 yards to just that one receiver.
Yeah. We had a great game together.
Cumulatively. But here's what I will say. I will say this, that I know. You have to know this. The reason they took that beating was because of the coach, the defense, and the offensive line. It had nothing to do with the quarterback.
Well, you know, the thing is, I was actually...
That's what I see. How's that?
I was at that game.
Okay.
I've known this since that night. It had nothing to do with me. It was nobody else's
fault. Right out of my mind.
But in all... let's look at the start of the season last night for UNLV. Taking it, we were all there last night. We all saw the performance of that. And other than... the infestation of grasshoppers that decided at the end of the game to infiltrate. I meant to ask Tony Sanchez about the grasshoppers because they were driving me nuts. I can only imagine if you were playing. It's got to be a little scary. You're running full speed and one goes into your face mask.
We're used to it. We've acclimated. We've got adjusted to the grasshopper situation. Just like the Heat.
Is that a home field advantage?
Yes. It's the 12th man. There's all kinds of 12th mans all over the place. We've got our 12th man, the grasshoppers.
Well, how about this, though? The attendance supposedly that they said was 17,000. I'm going to say about 7,000 of that was the grasshoppers, give or take.
That might be a good assessment. But you know what? Honestly, it was the first game of the season.
The grasshoppers.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, my God. Seriously. I was impressed. I really like the fact that you saw UNLV's coaching staff find weaknesses and exploit them over and over again until the weaknesses got a little bit stronger, and then they went somewhere else. And they really seemed to do that well. I was extremely impressed the way they ran the ball up the middle throughout the beginning of the game. And they continue to do it. You would think Southern Utah would make an adjustment. Either they didn't make an adjustment or they simply couldn't. But then again, in the second half, it seemed like they plugged that gap.
And here's the thing. I think in the past, UNLV has found a lot more success running up the middle than around the edges. I know they have a lot of speedy running backs. And they've had, you know, Lexington, of course, in the past, he's a fast guy. Charles is a fast guy. And they had a lot of perimeter runs. And I think the thing you saw about this game was they tried the perimeter run in the first two drives. And it didn't work. And they immediately decided, okay, we're going to switch it up. And I think that's one thing you didn't see a lot of last season was they had a game plan and they kind of stuck to it sink or swim. But this week they adjusted and did some things differently. Also, of course, I think everybody's going to notice this is they ran some screens. Instead of looking for Armani to be some sort of pocket passing guru or something like that,
they played to his strengths
and they got the ball on the perimeter. They sped the tempo up a little bit. They have playmakers outside. The receivers can make plays in open space. Well, and Tylee Collins didn't even have a game. He dropped a pass. He dropped a pass, which is uncharacteristic of him. He was trying to make
around the edge. They caught him.
Yeah, he didn't have as good of a game as he could, but there's other people on the edges that can perform. And Makai Stevens is one of them. He's an athlete with the ball in his hands. The problem is he doesn't get the ball in his hands often because they're trying to run these deep crossing routes and all this kind of thing that Armani's just not accurate at this point. And it is what it is. Tim Tebow wasn't the most accurate passer either, but he won the Heisman. I mean, like those kind of things you can live with in college football. He's going to have to develop it at some point. But right now, play with what you got. And using the screen game, getting the ball to those athletes is probably the best bet right now. And I think they learned that about themselves this season. Maybe
they still are going to have to attempt to get this guy to throw the deep ball because you're going to need it at times during the season.
Oh, there's no doubt.
And it's pretty ugly. As you mentioned, he can't drop the ball in the bucket.
You and I were saying that last year.
Yeah, I mean, Caleb's
been harping on it for forever now.
One of the things,
here's the other thing. You talk about the deep ball. The one deep ball he threw, which was caught, against a better team, that's probably intercepted.
It's a picked off pass. So it was a great catch.
It was underthrown.
Without question. But I'll tell you, one of the Caleb Herring of this season, a guy who wanted to make sure he saw the field and he was going to do anything. How about Drew Tecmann to switch from being a wide receiver last year? And he looked pretty effective as a wide receiver. But, man, he looks good as a free safety. He really
does. Him in fall camp, he actually was recruited out of high school as one of the highest recruited. He was highly recruited, I should say, as a defensive back coming out of high school. And he made the decision that he wanted to play receiver. And UNLV was one of the schools that was allowing him to play receiver, and that's was part of his decision to come here to play receiver. But he's a natural athlete, and I think the switch over to the secondary.
Oh, helps Tony
the team,
bamboozled
think,
him, didn't he? He knew all along. He would switch him.
I think he addressed the need. I think it would have been great if Techman could have stayed playing receiver, but I think his money will be made if there's money to be made on the defensive side.
Without
he's
question.
A natural over there.
He looked like
he
belonged.
He looks the part. I think he's put on some weight. He's put on some size, some muscle mass. And he made some plays during fall camp that were like, wow, this guy's going to
well,
be good.
Well, I
got to
ask you two things, and we'll get off this subject, because UNLV, everything happened that was expected, other than maybe the end of the game and a guy going taking two steps back and not kneeling in the end zone.
You know how
well,
significant
happened right
that,
front
that
of me.
Play, by the way.
Misinterpretation of rules is all that was
that
to
play
me.
Turned out to be very significant, because apparently, from what I was told, the game in the second half, it was a push. When Southern Utah
on the
scored,
total, right?
On the second half line.
I thought it was the total. I think it was like 33 or something like that.
Line, but
either way, it affected it.
When he took, so it was a push,
and then
the 2 points ended up
sending it over.
Whether you won or lost.
That I mean, we understand. We've all had brain farts in our life. That's a bad one.
I wouldn't even say it's a brain fart. It's just a misinterpretation of the rules. I think he understood that you can fair catch.
The momentum can carry you into the end zone.
No, but not even that. It's you can fair catch a kickoff that doesn't go to the end zone. Like, you don't have to run it. You don't have to run
catch,
it back.
Though. He didn't
right,
give
right.
the signal.
And
that's what cost him.
I think he probably knew that he didn't have to be in the end zone to get it on the 25, which is what he's trying to do.
He still should have just run the damn football out of the – I mean, well, he had plenty of space.
They didn't
he
want
had enough
to,
space to pick up to get to the 12-yard line
at
least.
I think at that point in the game, they were like, okay, let's get out of here. Southern Utah obviously wasn't on the same page because they called timeouts for the last two drives and put up points after – you know, but either way, I think he should have just made a better decision.
It was kind of we were literally Chris, myself, and Jose were standing right there, and it was all like me and Max looked at each other like, "What did that just happen?" I thought, like I said, we stepped into Sam Boyd Twilight Zone because
he thought no one would notice.
He was the king in his clothes.
Maybe Bobby Houck was his special teams coach.
Oh, oh God, we got it in.
At least we didn't do it.
I'm only saying that.
No. And you're going to stick up for me here, because the special teams was so bad under Bobby Houck, and Bobby Houck not only was a head coach,
he was the special teams coordinator.
Thank you.
Okay, that was his. So Matt, but I got to say this: with we talked about opening a wound at the beginning of fact. This we didn't open the wound. Actually, Mark Anderson opened the wound a couple of days ago in the Review Journal. I read the article, and when you walked into San Boy Stadium, what did you get the feeling Mark said you were going to get in the paper? Was it like that or no?
Well, I love walking in San Boy Stadium, especially for week one, but it wasn't exactly the feeling. I had kind of gotten over this game, you know.
But there wasn't a little
through many therapy sessions. And,
there wasn't a little
and,
old
and
poke.
Lonely nights full of tears. I had gotten over this game, and Mark was the true culprit of opening up. But it was a great story. He called me and asked me if I'd be willing to open up and give my side of things. And it was
what made you say yes? No, knowing your past and the depression or whatever you went through, what made you say yes?
Because, you know, when you're over it and you've truly moved on from it, it doesn't bother you to talk about things. Like, the worst things in life aren't that bad.
But you were seen walking down the road like sucking your thumb on Wednesday. So, I mean, that had nothing to do with the article? Okay, we'll leave it alone. Mags, give us some nightcap, because this is kind of a surprise, too.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, Chris, as you well know, there's been a big change with the Vegas Golden Knights, and it evolves around the broadcast of the game. The initial hit came with the television crew, which I got to tell you, Chris, I thought they did a really good job. I thought that that Allison was as good as it gets down there. I mean, she did what she was supposed to do. She got the right interviews in between periods. They played it up on the big screen at T-Mobile Arena, and I thought she did a fine job. And you know, I was a fan of Brad May when he was a player, and I really thought he did a good job. He played the very watered down John Madden role of hockey in his own way, doing it. He was a good homer for the Vegas Golden Knights. The whole thing really surprised me, and it's just the beginning of more changes to come.
Yeah, I think You know, we heard some rumblings, at least I did, going back to the end of the season, that some of these changes were going to be coming. I did not expect Ali Lozoff to not come back. I wasn't sure about Brad May, but I had heard some rumblings about Darren Millard. He was in town a couple times last year. Supposedly he has a pretty tight connection to some of the guys in the organization. He's another Manitoba guy. So I guess, you know.
You got an old Las Vegas Wrangler going to be in the booth, too.
Yeah, Mike McKenna, who I remember from his days playing goalie with the Wranglers. He was the goalie the year that I think they made the I think it was called the Kelly Cup, the ECHL.
That they used to play, that they played for, whatever.
They ended up losing to Cincinnati that year. But I think
McKenna was the goalie.
McKenna was the goalie. But I remember when he first came up, he went on this streak where it was just absolutely insane. And actually, he may have played with Derek England on that team. I don't know for sure if England was a member of that
team. He was, because it was 2006, and that's when England was playing for the Wranglers. So very.
But McKenna ended up getting called up to Milwaukee.
Played,
and then
like,
he had
three different teams, three different NHL franchises.
No, I think he played for a lot more than that.
No, I think it was three or four. Honestly, I really do. I think I look him up, but I think it was three or four teams in the NHL.
He's a guy who old school hockey fans in Vegas will obviously remember. He's also a guy who has quite a bit of personality. He does a podcast, and he's been on NHL Network a bunch of times.
I honestly thought it was his ability he overachieved. I thought he did. I didn't think he was going to play in the NHL when he was playing with the Wranglers. He overachieved.
I thought that there was a chance, because you saw that he could play.
Oh, no question.
But never thought he would have as long as a career. Yeah. Like, in fact, a couple of years ago, I was like, man, Mike McKenna is still
playing. He played for seven teams.
He played last year. Yeah, I mean, last year was his last year,
2019.
Yeah, I think he was with Vancouver, and then he got traded to Philadelphia, I think, towards the middle of the season.
Jose's pulling up. The other person I want to talk about, the hardest last name to spell in all of sports, Stormy, another local Las Vegas person. She was here, has had some experience last couple of years with the Carolina Panthers in the NHL, but I think it's not that the new broadcast team isn't going to do a great job. It's just I don't know what the change or why there was need for a change this early on, or what they saw that they didn't like.
Well, this is now they've made multiple changes now, because remember year one, Connor McGahey was the studio guy, and he worked with Brad May and Ali Lozoff. And, now Nick Gismondi, who is a really nice guy, a super knowledgeable guy, a very fan favorite guy. I'm not sure what happens with him, but it's tough, because in the professional world, it's like, these are people that I know, and you don't want to ever see anyone you know lose their job, especially people you like. But in the same regard, it's like, all right, well, it's an opportunity to meet some new people and have an opportunity to learn to like those people.
Business. Yeah, there's some people I know I don't mind when they lose their job.
Well, but are they people that
you... I'm just being honest.
Not people you like, though.
No, of course not people you like.
My goodness, Brian.
I'm angry, right? And I've had such a good weekend.
There's such a great weekend for you.
Brian, going back to McKenna, he was way by the Flyers.
Me and you sat in the Hart parking lot on Saturday, or on Friday, right?
Yeah, we did.
We did sit in the Hart parking lot. First of all, it was hard finding the place. We had to go to the NFL alumni. We were supposed to meet Lyndon King. We love you, Lyndon. Not an issue, but we got there, and Lyndon forgot to write down the appointment. He's like, hey, I'm in San Diego. It's like, yeah, well, me and Caleb are sitting at the front door of the bolted lock here. We'll see you next Friday.
Wow.
So, well, the good news is, like I told him now, Lyndon, if you're out there listening, they're obligated now. They're obligated to be the sponsor of our Raiders report. So the NHL alumni, I'm calling
NHL,
them out right now.
NFL,
whatever. NHL.
Shameless way to get a date is what it is.
It is.
Hey, you know what?
Hey, and real quick, the studio number 702-876-1340. Yeah, give us a call.
Hey, listen, we're going to go to break. On the other side, we will have our Blazin coming up. And Caleb's got something different this year. Simone Biles will not be his Blazin. He's guaranteed us that. Neither will. I'm not even going to say that. I was going to go bad, and I'm going to stay away from that. But we'll talk about that. And hopefully, I forgot to text Michael Babcock this morning, so I'm hoping he's awake, and we'll get him on with TMZ Sports. I have no idea what we're going to talk about with Michael, but TMZ seems to break some great stuff, so that ought to be pretty cool. In studio with me today again, I'm Brian Feldman, Caleb Herring's here, Jose Vellante, and Chris Magnum Chapman. This is Out of Line, and we are here on Fox Sports Radio. Be right back.
This is why I'm hot. 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 I'm hot.
It is time for Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. A Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital. That's a Hail Mary pass that Caleb Herring is throwing because he could make that throw.
Bombs away.
Armani Rogers can't yet. We're going to work on that, although Caleb said it's not important. I think it is, but that's my point. But let's get into Blazin'. And aside from the UNLV Rebel football team that was blazing last night, did not blow the overall point spread, but did, I guess, mess things up in the second half with a bonehead safety. But other than that, they were blazing. But that's not my blazing. I'm going to start it off right here, and I'm going to tell you, you know what's blazing? How about the Minnesota Twins, man? Is that pretty incredible? You know, there's still, how many games they still have left in the season? I think there's like 27 games left in the season, and the Twins have hit, as of last night, they hit 6 home runs against the Detroit Tigers. And they have hit 268 home runs this year, which is a major league record. Also major league record, 8 players on the team have over 20 home runs this year. And that's pretty insane.
That's pretty insane.
27
the
games.
The Yankees record from last year.
But they've already broke the record with 27 games still to go in the season.
That's nuts.
I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a pretty tall.
You know what the haters would say? The analytics of that.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
All of these home runs, all of that pizzazz. And where are they as far as the rankings overall right now?
They're in first. In their division.
In their division. Central. Are they going to win the World Series?
No.
They got a hit parade going on.
It's either
going
to be the Yankees or the Dodgers that are going to win it.
That's what most people think.
Yes! Caleb liked that answer.
That's what Caleb wanted to hear.
Dodgers.
Dodgers.
Dodgers. We got to do our best to get Caleb some tickets to a Dodgers playoff game, and we'll get, you know.
We got to get him to throw out the first pitch.
No, I want to just get him. I just think, you know, it would be really cool to get Caleb to a playoff game to see the Dodgers, and we'll get him sitting right next to Bobby Houck at the game. That would be kind of cool.
Why do you do this to me? I mean,
they can both throw out the first pitch
how
together.
How cool would that be? One would throw him, one would catch it.
I'm sorry, bro.
Leave me alone.
All right, listen. Blazin, what do you got for Blazin? We'll leave you alone. It's not Simone Biles, though, right?
No, it's not Simone Biles. Okay. There's news about around her, but there's not going to be.
Not on this show.
Not for this show. Another time, maybe. But it would be easy to go college football, but you guys know me. I mean, there was a lot of Blazin. I mean, some upsets already in week one, mm-hmm. and this is why we love college football. This is why we get so excited about it. But that's not my Blazin. My Blazin's coming from an unorthodox place, and that's usually what I do. Naomi Osaka and Coco Gauff played last night, also at 7 o'clock. It was a busy night last night for sports, but they played. Their match was highly anticipated. The future of women's tennis mm-hmm. basically was on display.
US Open.
The match itself was not very entertaining, as Naomi Osaka is clearly a better player at this point in her career. Coco's just 15. You know, I mean, she has time, but Naomi's 21. She's trying to win at Arthur Ashe Stadium. She's trying to win another U.S. Open. She's going after, or a U.S. Open, trying to go after it. But what was better about it was the aftermath of, it was a genuine and sincere competitive embrace and, you know, sportsmanship at its finest with Naomi and Coco after, like I said, an organic meeting after, you know, usually the winner just gets the interview, but because of the gravity of the fandom for both of these two young tennis players, women of color, I just have to throw that out there, who are the face, basically, of the future of tennis, was huge. It was cool for me to watch all the people react to Naomi and Coco there and have a truly genuine moment. The tweets after, they were tweeting each other like besties. It was like, you got, you know, you're so young and you're amazing. And then Naomi says that, and then Coco comes back, you're my role model, girl power. And it's like such a great moment, but I'm like, women's tennis will be fine. And I think we finally have two people that a lot of people will get behind as far as women's tennis players, other than Serena and Venus Williams, because I think their era is kind of at the tail end, if nothing else, might be over. These two might be taking over. So they're blazing tonight.
I think it's cool, and especially just at a 15-year-old, and the two of them are so young, you're going to see their faces for a long way.
Yep.
And especially with what's going on in our society today,
to see
a case of sportsmanship, like you said, women of color like that, dude, I'm going to give it to you. That is really, really cool. And I'm also going to give it to you that it wasn't Simone Biles again. So that's good as well. Jose, what do you got
for
me?
All I'm going to ask is, can I go before Caleb moving forward? Because every time he comes out with one, I don't even know what to say afterwards. I just get stuck. It's hard
to follow.
Don't
give him any
does.
More credit than
Thanks,
he needs,
man.
Okay? I mean, seriously.
I appreciate that, Jose.
No problem. I'm speaking facts. So here's my thing. My blazing is college football.
There it is.
Just college football in general. Let's start off with, obviously, the first crazy game Nevada with a walk-on field goal kicker.
No, I know people don't want to hear Nevada. Hold on.
Excuse me?
They are called...
Reno.
Excuse me. Okay, Reno with a walk-on.
Jose's already given them the cannon, Megs.
No, not even close. Iowa State needing triple overtime to beat Northern Iowa. Florida State taking the huge L against Boise State.
Kansas. The Mountain West team's kicking up their heels.
Les Miles getting his first win with Kansas. Nothing too big there. Not an upset or anything like that. But Oregon, Auburn, we were talking about that game a minute ago as well. I just think in general, college football this weekend did not disappoint.
You know what was cool too? I mean, I don't like to give Reno credit for much, but you know what was cool about that? The walk-on kicker got a scholarship
right after
after that game. May have been a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. But for a kicker, I think, what else do you want a kicker to do to earn a scholarship? That is the best a kicker will ever give you. If he doesn't get a scholarship after that, then he's just not going to be on scholarship ever. Like, you're basically saying you'll never be on scholarship.
That is kind of blazing.
But it was cool.
It was that moment,
and I love that across college football.
I love
football,
when you see that.
When that walk-on gets a scholarship, they had a whole special on it on college football.
I was talking to Max.
One of my good friends, Micah, oh my God, I just ruined his name. Micah Mataelli. He was a walk-on. He transferred from Oregon State. He walked on to UNLV, and he earned a scholarship going into our senior season. And that was
one of the coolest moments. They make a big hoopla. Nobody knew.
Nobody had an idea. It's a secret.
It's kind of like.
And then a cold team goes crazy. We're all rooting for this guy.
Do you know the story behind the trophy?
Which trophy?
So they give out a trophy in college football every single year for the best player or whatever that was a walk-on. And it's based off of a guy that played at Arkansas. He was a walk-on, ended up being an All-American, got drafted in the third round by the Colts. The day after he got drafted, he was on his way to pick up his mom to go to church, and he died in a car accident, never even got to play.
So some of the notable winners last, I mean, Baker Mayfield won it because he was a walk-on. But the walk-on story is a great factor in college football. That kind of thing can only happen in college football. It's amazing to me. I love it.
This one, you know, I have to give some thought, but I am a certified SEC hater.
Yes.
So whenever I could diss the SEC, I take a shot at it.
Where do I sign up for that club?
I am going to go with Georgia State as blazing. Now, what does Georgia State have to do with the SEC?
Big win yesterday.
Big win yesterday at Neyland Stadium in Knoxville.
Yep, Tennessee.
Tennessee, the largest Southeast Conference favorite to lose a game in the last 40 years. They were 25-point favorites over Georgia State. They ended up losing 38-30 for Georgia State, their first road win in almost 2 years.
The only way that would have been better, they lost seven games. They only won two games last year, Georgia State.
And one was against Kansas State.
Season of existence.
They were 2-10.
I love that blazon. Yep. The only way that blazon is better is if Lane Kiffin would have still been the coach at Tennessee when it happened.
Well, it's even
better.
That's
the only way it would have been any better for me.
Because this is a program. Remember, they were going to hire Greg Schiano, who is a very good college football coach. I know because I'm from New Jersey and I saw what he did at Rutgers. Took him to an eyelash of the Orange Bowl. And instead of embracing him, the stupid fans in Knoxville dug up all this dirt about Schiano. None of it was true, so that he didn't get the job and put all this pressure on. So you know what? That school getting what they deserve.
Karma.
Yes.
Tennessee karma. Volunteer karma. Michael Babcock a call here and get him on the phone if he's awake in California right now. But Blazin' is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings at the 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Again, a Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital. And we are less than a week away now. A week and a day away from our first Buffalo Wild Wings party. They are expanding it. We're also going to be doing this year some watch parties for the Vegas Golden Knights at all the different Buffalo Wild Wings location, expanding our role a little bit and appreciate Buffalo Wild Wings. They have been a sponsor of this show since day one, way back when it was the Jake and Dad show, you know, when the show actually had some quality to it. But anyways, Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Cross Plaza.
I'm going on vacation next week.
Two happy years. Oh, you going to join Jose? So listen, Mags is trying to get a hold of him. Like I said, my bad that I did not give Michael a text this morning. So that is a 100% on me. But guys, one of the things we can talk about, the preseason in the National Football League is coming to a close, or it is closed, and we're heading to the regular season. They're starting off, and I think the reason a lot of people are like, why the Bears and the Packers? Well, it's the oldest rivalry in football, and it is the 100th anniversary of the National Football League. Yeah. So that's why they're starting off with that game. We'll give you that. We are going to do a pick segment here starting on Sunday. We'll all pick Thursdays to start. But yeah, we're gonna do a segment on Sundays as we did last year, and we'll come up what that's going to be for. Also, we are going to start next week. We will have a name for the segment, but it will be a Raiders report, something to do with the Oakland Raiders each week. We will give you an update since they are coming to town next week. Some people really believe that Derek Carr is going to be the answer for this team. I hope he is. Like I said, I've got my prediction. I just don't think that I think that he is a middle of the road quarterback. And I think for the Raiders to move forward, I think that, you know, it's just like that thing when you see Derek Carr a couple years ago before he had the knee injury, when he had the 11-win season, took him to the playoffs, and then it killed Connor Cook's career because he was not ready to go into a playoff game.
Yeah.
But the whole thing was, it looked like when he came back a year later, the NFL had figured him out. And you know how that is, Caleb. Some guys go in and they play tremendously well. And I think an example of that might be a guy like Case Keenum, where it's like, you know, now everyone's figured out what his weaknesses are.
Case Keenum's been getting figured out a lot because he's had a lot of second lives in the NFL.
He has.
I mean, he's had some...
Not as many as the
beard. Rejuvenations and all that. Yeah.
That's going to be starting in Miami again. My guy.
So he's
talk about a true human cat.
Yeah, this guy cannot... Well, he
won't
die.
It's Fitzmagic.
For the first three games of the season.
We can't get rid of this guy. He keeps every
cup.
Nathan Peterman's the next Fitzpatrick. I thought there was no way that after throwing five picks in one half that you bring that guy's NFL career lasts. And now he's on the Raiders depth chart.
Gruden.
Someone else got cut because this guy's the third quarterback on the depth chart.
Gruden.
Why?
You know what?
Why?
I'm telling you something.
How does he make it?
Maybe
he's like a
cockroach.
Look at his preseason numbers, though.
You know
he did decent in the preseason.
But
he shouldn't even got that chance.
Maybe
if you're asking
Peterson,
me. Like, you don't even get to come to camp if you throw five interceptions
maybe
in a half.
Maybe Peterson's wife has a hot sister or something like that, and Gruden likes looking around the sidelines. I don't know, because it didn't make a lot of sense to me. And especially how highly he has been praising him. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is scaring the hell out of me. It'd be like highly praising Jacoby Brissett. I just don't see it.
Four wins with the Patriots.
But listen, Mags, let's take our second break. We'll go to that. We're going to come back. We'll try to give Gemma a call from the Las Vegas Aviators. They are in a dogfight themselves. I mean, they've got two games
you
left.
Did it too.
They're one game up with the I did it, right? I played on those words too. But the El Paso Chihuahua. Chihuahuas are right on their heels. Let's say they're nipping at their heels.
I got that in there.
So here's the thing. There is two games left. They're up by a game. It means that pretty much both these games are significant. What I don't know, and what Jim Gemmel will fill us in, is how is the tiebreaker? Because I'm 90% sure if they end up tied, there is a tiebreaker. They don't play each other in one game playoff. It's not like the regular, you know, the Major League Baseball. So we'll find out what that is. And also, the team that does win from the Southern Division in the Pacific Coast League is going to host the first round against Red Rocks. So it really is huge to have the first season. And what a great thing with Vegas. You come here in your first season, you make the playoffs. Maybe the Raiders ought to take a look at this and find a new quarterback before they come here. Hey, listen, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back. Minutes in front of 9 o'clock. You're listening Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. I'm Brian Feldman. To my left on your radio dial, former quarterback of the UNLV Rebels, vindicated this past week. He's happy.
Sweet, sweet revenge.
There we go. Sweet revenge, even though he wasn't the guy in the field. Like I said, we didn't open the wound. Mark Anderson did, so we'll blame it on him. Jose Vellante's here as well, and Chris Magnum Chapman behind the wheels of steel taking care of things. And on the phone right now, the media relations director for the Las Vegas Aviators, and they are on the verge of the playoffs, but they are also right now have the longest losing streak in the Pacific Coast League at the worst possible time. It's three games, and if they don't stop the bleeding, they could play their way out of the playoffs. And it's kind of unfortunate because they've got a great record in any other division except one. They'd be leading the division, but the El Paso Chihuahuas right on their heels, a good team, the AAA franchise of the San Diego Padres. And Jimmy, is this bleeding going to stop today? I know you're going to say you hope so, but three games losing streak right now. Why?
Yeah, right now it's Las Vegas is 81-57, and El Paso is 80-58. So we got two games left. Game 139 is tonight. Feels like 239, but it is 139. And you know, everybody's in the same boat. There's September call-ups. The Oakland A's are in a playoff situation, and that takes first priority over everything. But the fact of the matter is, the team's lost three in a row, and we'll see how the last two games go. I mean, it's not the same team that was here a week or two ago, but that also goes for teams in along the, you know, Iowa Cubs are the same situation, Round Rock Express are in the same situation, and the Sacramento River Cats are in the same situation. So we'll just see how it plays out.
Yeah, every team's got to go through this. This is the call-up time. This is when they make the roster moves, and especially the teams in a playoff hunt. And as you mentioned, all of the division winners, you know, are going to face the same thing. Jimmy, what the one thing I don't know is what is the tiebreaker situation? Because like I said, I don't think it's a one-game playoff like you have in Major League Baseball. So if both El Paso and Vegas end up with the same record, who goes?
Yeah, what's going to happen, the bottom line is Las Vegas has to win by one game in the standings. Not because this will take too long to explain, but the Pacific Conference opponents, actually right now Las Vegas has a one-game lead on that. But however, if the next 2 days, and it just plays out that, you know, just say after tomorrow's noon game, both teams are tied, El Paso would have leapfrogged Las Vegas for a better record in the Pacific Conference. That's against all the other teams in that conference, like Sacramento and Fresno.
I got you. So that's the tiebreaker. It's not a head-to-head thing?
Yes, it is. I'm trying to...
Your head-to-head record.
I know you have time. We're 8-8 during the regular season with El Paso, 25-23 against divisional. That's how close this is.
Wow.
The fact of the matter is, if it's tied after tomorrow, El Paso gets the tiebreaker.
Well, tomorrow's game significant either way. I mean, it could be where they, you know, they're playing for to win and El Paso to lose. But the bottom line is, they just need to take care of business. If they win today, then they control their destiny, and that's the bottom line. Because right now they do control their destiny. They win two games. There's no question who goes, and they would host that first round against the Sacramento River Cats because they have a better record. Correct?
No, what happens with the Pacific Coast League, it alternates year to year. So the first two games are going to be in Sacramento on Wednesday and Thursday. So game three will be Friday, September 6th, either in El Paso or Las Vegas. So game three, four, and five, if Las Vegas wins the division, it will be here in Las Vegas, 6th, 7th, and 8th, 7th and 8th if necessary. The first two games of this series is in Sacramento on Wednesday and Thursday.
Gotcha. So it'll be over the weekend. Jimmy, just one more time about, you know, again, don't want to put the cart before the horse, but if there are playoffs, is it something people can purchase in advance, or do they got to wait until it's official that they're in?
Yeah, the season ticket holders already have had the option to purchase. Our playoff tickets have been on sale for a few days. The best part about this, just in case Las Vegas does not qualify, obviously refunds will be rendered, and or it can be applied to 2020 tickets. So yeah, we have been selling playoff tickets. So again, tonight at 7 o'clock, and then the season and the finale for everybody tomorrow is in the afternoon at Labor Day.
Get out there. Tomorrow's a day off for a lot of people. Me and Magnum, and looks like Jose's going to head down there as well. Check it out. Two more games, two more chances today and tomorrow to see them in the regular season. And God willing, a little bit of luck, and they play their game and get out of this funk. They'll be in the playoffs, and you get a chance to see them at the Las Vegas ballpark in its inaugural season in the postseason. Jimmy, as always, man, greatly appreciate you coming on the show, and look forward to seeing you tomorrow out at the Las Vegas ballpark.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me on all season long.
Oh, absolutely, man. Love the sponsorship. And that is the Las Vegas Aviators Report, brought to you by the Las Vegas Aviators, that play at the brand-new Las Vegas ballpark out in Summerlin. Again, you got two more chances today and tomorrow guaranteed to get out there and see it. And I highly recommend, if you haven't, that you do. Finally, guys, the Las Vegas, another team that is right now vying for position in the playoffs. They're already in, the Las Vegas Aces. And a couple of things, Chris, you've been to a lot of games. Jose, you've been to some games. Caleb hasn't, but you follow the team. Kelsey Plum has been benched.
Yep.
And Liz Cambage has really not really played well since the All-Star break. We kind of know the reasoning. Mentally, you can get messed up over things that happen in your personal life. And I can't think of any other reason that Cambage isn't playing her best basketball. But what a time for this team to have a hiccup when they are positioning to try to get a home game. And unlike most professional sports where you get a series in the WNBA, it's one and done. So hosting a first-round playoff game is kind of big. Even though they have had pretty good success on the road, you still always want that playoff game at home. And one of the things about the Mandalay Bay Event Center is that place has been pretty damn well packed for these Aces games. So I think it's crucial that this team win out and win their final two games. It was a huge game and a huge win last night against the LA Sparks, the team that they're competing against for that third spot. But you got to finish in the top four to get a playoff game. Top two teams get a bye. The next two teams host that first-round playoff game. Six teams make it in. Chris, can this team win two games in a row? And the one thing is, Kelsey Plum, man, so good at the University of Washington, but just not the offensive power she was there. She is a very good defensive player, but there's a reason Bill Laimbeer has taken her out of the starting lineup.
Yeah, and her role is very different here. She's not supposed to go out there and score 28 points a game like she was doing in college. It just doesn't seem like the right fit for her. And I don't know if it's her or if it's coaching, but it just perception-wise, it just doesn't look like it's a good fit for Kelsey in Las Vegas, which is a shame because I think she's a fan favorite.
She's a popular player.
But, you know, the reality is something's gone wrong with this team the last month or so. Maybe last night's victory will turn things around. But if you were to ask me today, are they the best team in the WNBA? I would flat out tell you no, they're not.
Washington is the best
team. I don't even know if they're the second or third best team in the WNBA right now. Now, granted, things can change. You get hot, start playing well. But right now, I know early on they were the favorites to win. They're not the favorites to win.
Well, they'd have to put it all together in the next week and get it back together because the bottom line is, Chris, they have the talent. There's no doubt they've got the talent to win.
They've got to win games on the road.
They do.
Which is not something they've done a lot of the last, basically, second half of the season. I mean, they were blown out a couple games last week on the road. I think Minnesota crushed them, and was it Connecticut blew them out too? But, the thing is they haven't played well since the All-Star break, and I don't know if it's fatigue or if there's something else going on. Obviously, I'm not in the locker room right now. I don't know, but it just seems like something went wrong, and now they're hopefully last night they got things turned around. They were down double digits most of the game.
Yep, and they came back and won
against a team that you're fighting for a playoff position. And so hopefully last night was the game that everything clicked and they were able to get it righted again. But right now, I mean, I don't even know if they win if they advance to the second round of the playoffs.
It's going to be interesting. Two road games to close out the season. They'll finish up next Sunday is the season finale and then the postseason, which is something they will be participating in. But how well they do, like Chris said, they're going to have to win on the road. They're not their best case scenario. They're going to finish as the third seed. So they'll get one home game and they're going to have to win on the road. And they could potentially, I guess, host the championship series. But it'll be interesting, man. The Las Vegas Aces, they have been exciting. It is another thing that if you haven't been out to see a game like Caleb Herring, you should get out there before the end of the season and check him out. Because maybe if you went out there and saw Asia Wilson play, maybe you would change your tune.
No.
Okay.
I will never back down from
the fact that you don't want to back down from that challenge.
I've said it before. I will not back down from any challenge. Anyone who wants these buckets can get these buckets.
Bring it. Except we're not getting in the octagon.
We're not
getting the octagon.
I stay in my lane.
Last night we talked about
passing accuracy competitions. Basketball games, I can do those. Tom Brady, if you want this accuracy challenge, come get some. But if you're talking about octagons and boxing gloves, no, that's not me. I have a face that's not made for fighting, and I will not do it.
I respect that. And you know, we talked about it last night, because on the sidelines at all the UNLV games, and also one of the ushers at the UNLV basketball games, Robert Byrd, the longtime boxing official, who we got to get on the show soon, Caleb, because I don't know if you knew this, and don't feel bad if you didn't. You might have. But you know what made him really famous, and it was very recent in his long career.
Right?
No, not his wife. And I know you're going to say Adelaide Byrd. No, I wasn't going after Adelaide today. Okay. I'm going to leave her alone. I was going to say, he was in the ring in the official between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, probably one of the most anticipated non-real boxing matches in the history of the sport, and he actually got the call and was in the ring, and I thought it'd be kind of interesting.
So he's the man that saved Conor's life.
Probably. Yeah, okay. Probably. I would say that's a pretty good assessment. Listen, as we run out of time, we are going to have an NFL picks, and as I mentioned, we are going to have a Raiders segment starting next week that Caleb is going to have to do some due diligence at home. I'm so nice, I don't have to do something for once. So
Herring's Huddle? Does that work?
Ooh, I don't mind that one. Herring's Huddle. I still like pickled herring the best, but it's
like a menu item at Popeyes.
I've eaten pickled herring in Sweden.
It's good stuff, right?
I didn't think I would like it, but it's actually pretty good.
It's not too bad, but we'll come up with that next week. As far as the picks go, today there's only one game really to talk about, because we'll be able to talk about all of them next week. It is one of the longest standing rivals in the National Football League, and of course I hate both teams, being an NFC North guy with the Detroit Lions, but it is the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers supposed to be healthy, good. The Packers are not supposed to be a good team. They are playing a team predicted to win the NFC North, the Chicago Bears, Mitchell Trubisky. I'm still really surprised they got rid of Jordan. With Cohen and Jordan, they had a really good two-headed monster last year. I thought one of the best offensive backfields in the National Football League, but it's hard keeping teams together. I think that might have hurt the Bears a bit, but the Bears have something that wins championships.
Khalil Mack?
And that is defense.
Oh, yeah.
And Khalil Mack, you might as well say that, because he by himself is a guy like Aaron Donald that can be the entire defense.
Yeah.
And the Bears, you can't count of any game because of how good he is. And it's why I still have trouble stomaching the Oakland Raiders. It's -3. The Bears are at home. Here's what I can tell you about the NFC North being involved in it for so long. The Bears will lose this game at home to the Packers, even though the Bears should win, because that's the way the NFC always goes. It goes backwards. It reminds me of the NFC East as well, when it's the Cowboys and the Giants and the Redskins and the Eagles. You never know. They go to each other's home and beat each other. You can't judge it by a point spread. I'm going to say the Packers are going to win this game by 10 points Thursday night in Chicago, which makes no sense whatsoever, and that's why it's going to happen.
I'm gonna go against you.
I knew you were going to,
just because I want to. it's a picket game to me. I don't think there's any. It's week one, especially. We haven't seen any of the starters really play very much. But I think the Bears win it at home. I think the Bears are the real deal this year. I think Trubisky has a good season.
They're gonna win by more than three. Yeah,
I think by a touchdown.
Okay, Mags.
I'm going Chicago. New coach for Packers as well. That's something that should be talked about. The Bears are still angry about losing that game last year to the Packers. They win this week.
Bears take down Aaron Eagle Rodgers. What about you, Jose?
I'm a money's guy, so I'm going to go ahead and go with the books. I'm taking Chicago because the sports books need the Bears, so I'm taking Chicago -3.
I'm going to be 1-0, and it's going to be 0-3 in here. That's pretty cool. Hey, listen, this is Out of Line. I want to thank everyone for joining the show. Jimmy Gemma, we'll get Michael Babcock on here next week. Caleb Herring, Jose Vellante, Chris Magnum Chapman, I'm Brian Feldman. This is Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Back next week, same time, same place. Bye-bye.